There is some colorful language in this episode, aka cuss words. So if you have kids, you've been warned.
How much is a toothbrush? $4 for a toothbrush? $1.99.
When I go shopping, I always buy what's on sale. Even though millennials doing really well, I'm still on a budget.
Deodorant. $7.49.
Every single time I go to the grocery store or I go out to eat, I immediately whip out my phone and type down what I've spent.
Gum, $1.59, and $1.99 for toothbrush.
But it's not like that for everyone.
Wow, look at that house. Beautiful houses. Who lives in these houses?
I have friends with big houses and big boats who have the luxury of spending money more carelessly. Their lifestyles can sometimes be overwhelming, especially when we get together, and it feels like we're living in two different worlds. When your friends are living lives that you can't afford, how do you maintain your relationship and not begrudge them for their social status or feel ashamed of your own? You're listening to Millennial, a podcast about coming of age while maneuvering your 20s. I know there are rich people in the world. I see them on reality TV shows all the time.
It's like, I'm from the OC.
What's your name?
It's going down in the OC.
There are the teenagers from that show, Laguna Beach.
Life in Beverly Hills is a game, and I make the rules.
The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
I wanted to see if you guys are going to be in my video game.
And the classic, Keeping Up with the Kardashians. When I see these people on TV, their lives feel distant, and I assume my life would never really cross paths with people with this much money. I mean, I come from a modest household. My mom was a public school teacher and my dad designed roads for different counties. Growing up, we didn't have cable, air conditioning, and we bought our food at Aldi, a cheap off-brand grocery store that sold a version of Oreos but called them the original chocolate sandwich cookies. At my inner city public school, no one was getting a brand new car for their 16th birthday. So I was convinced people with a lot of money would never live in my world and I would never live in theirs.
That's the class of 2014.
But I was wrong. I got a taste of that world in college. For me, I didn't even know what like a trust fund baby was until I went to college. This is me talking on the phone with some friends from high school. I didn't know if you had that same experience.
Yeah, I absolutely did. There were people around me who had like gone to private schools their whole life that cost more than my college tuition.
I had no idea. I mean, basically all stuff I had seen on TV.
Where people talked very regularly about having maids or, you know, like the help or whatever.
I mean, I began becoming very conscious of it on a personal level. You know, being aware of my social status and how that relates to my self-worth.
It's very difficult to relate on a level with these people who come from, like, a totally different life.
Just bizarre. It was just a shift in my perception of the world.
In college, my perception changed, too. For the first time, I was surrounded by people who were studying photography, and they could afford $3,000 cameras and $1,000 lenses, or could take time off school or not work during the summer because they were going to go overseas and do a self-funded photo project. Even though I knew some of these kids had more money, like a lot more money, in the classroom, it didn't really matter. People had to prove themselves with their work, so the playing field always felt leveled, and people's wealth didn't divide us outside the classroom either.
And at college, it was kind of like, yeah, everyone has a shitty apartment and everyone drinks shitty beer.
That's my friend Eric. We went to college together.
Everyone looks kind of like frazzled and like ratty. and there wasn't a hierarchy based on class.
Yeah. In college, or at least in our program, money never really came up. We were too busy taking photos and competing against each other to really notice, especially Eric and me.
Because, okay, you explain how we met.
So winter of 2010, I found myself transferring from a university in Chicago back to Kentucky where I grew up. And part of my class of transferees, there was this bright-eyed and bushy-tailed girl named Megan with a silver rebel and an attitude that made me just want to strangle her.
Oh, that's so accurate. What were your impressions of me in the very beginning?
When Eric and I first met, we were enemies. He didn't like me, and I didn't like him because he didn't like me.
I don't know. I felt like I was a lot more competitive. I felt like I had something to prove.
When did that change?
We started supporting each other more and seeing each other's kind of own visions or priorities. And we're like, okay, let's nurture that.
Once Eric and I saw each other as the same person who wanted to do really well at this one craft, we became really close. Pretty soon, Eric and I went from being enemies to being frenemies to being just friends. We set the bar for each other, and we pushed each other to grow.
Like, after that, I never felt quite as, like, charged up or inspired by my peer group and pressure to create that I haven't really felt since then. I don't know if I ever will feel that again.
I know what he means. There are parts of college that I won't ever feel again either.
Spinach, tomatoes, cheddar cheese, red onions, English muffin and home fries for $10. We also have steak and eggs, 5-ounce steak, red pepper coulis on top, 2 eggs served however you like, English muffin and home fries for $15. Then we have also biscuits and gravy.
If you've been listening since episode 1, you know all this. But for those who haven't, I'll explain. Right after college, I came to terms with a clear fact. I couldn't pay rent with my hopes and dreams. My landlord didn't take post-it notes with goals on them. I had to work.
Everybody was like, where is the pancake? So we had to bring it back.
5 months after I received my degree, I became a server. Even though I couldn't have asked for a better restaurant, coming home smelling like onions gut-punched me for months. For a while, survival looked like sore feet, working weekends, and coffee-stained t-shirts. Being a server shaved off part of my pride. At the time, I felt removed from where I was just a few months ago, in a classroom with my peers, critiquing each other's work and editing each other's portfolio. I wondered how they were all doing out here in the real world, and if it was as hard for them as it was for me. When are you coming back up to Maine?
When?
Yeah.
I'll be up there probably by, like, Friday.
I was working at the restaurant and in the midst of applying for a second job when Eric came into town. His parents have a house up here in Maine, and he spent most of his summers up here. When he came, we had a nice visit. I took him to some of my favorite local spots, and we got deep into conversation about our futures, our goals, and our lives. It felt like we were having the same kind of conversations we had in college. After hanging out, I told him I'd drop him off at his parents' place. Even though it's 30 minutes from where I live, I had never been. It's in Kennebunkport. As we got closer, Eric told me it would be best to drop him off at the place where he works, the marina. When we got out of the car, there were tons of boats, mostly sailboats, but that wasn't what we were headed toward. At the end of the pier was one of the biggest boats on the deck by far. It's about 64 feet long with 2 decks and a control room and a motorboat on top. It's painted white the cleanest white I had ever seen. It was right there that I learned Eric's family owned a yacht and a marina. My eyes grew and my mouth dropped. I had no idea Eric's lifestyle looked like Kim Kardashian's. I couldn't stay long. I had an interview for a second job at a retail store that afternoon. Before I got in my car to leave, Eric gave me $20 for gas and the toll I would hit on the way back. I started to refuse to take it. The toll only costs a dollar, but he insisted. I glanced back at the yacht, and I knew that his $20 meant more to me than it did to him. Plus, I wasn't sure I could fish out another dollar out of the bottom of my purse. So I thanked him and then left. As I pulled away from the marina, I felt like I was driving away from a parallel universe. But what I didn't know is that I was also leaving a friendship behind.
It's like dark. It's like this dark.
It's not a nice thing to feel.
This is Christina, a friend of mine from high school. Back in Portland, I was struggling to come to terms with how I felt.
I was pissed, you know, like I was, I was pissed that he didn't have to necessarily go through like what I was going through. And then when we would hang out, I almost like couldn't talk to him in a way that I felt like was real. Because in the back of my mind, I was just like, you don't know what this is like. And like, I'm talking about work. And like, you don't come home smelling like onions.
It's hard to explain why I felt pissed. And it's not really something I'm proud of.
Excuse me? Two coffees? No problem. You folks still need a minute?
Sometimes after a long brunch shift or a double, when my feet and back would ache and my hair would smell like burnt potatoes, I would scroll through Instagram and see Eric in the Bahamas or on his shiny white yacht. And this feeling of resentment would bubble up. The truth was, I wasn't just bitter that Eric had money. It almost felt like he had betrayed me in a way. In college, we were working towards the same things together. And after college, I just expected he would be facing the same challenges and demands I would be. But his life was totally different from mine. He had a huge safety net that I didn't have. For a while, I tried to ignore these feelings. I'm not a bitter person. But as the months passed, we didn't talk. When he would tell me he was coming into town, I felt like I didn't want to see him face to face. I felt like I didn't want to be his friend because he had money. I couldn't believe I was letting this happen. I was letting something as shallow as money come between us. I knew I had to come clean with him. I needed to find out if we could still be friends despite the different worlds we were living in.
Barnsdale.
Exit the traffic circle onto Fletcher Street. In a quarter mile, turn left onto Main Street.
So one random day, I decided to take a trip back to Kennebunkport to see him. I grabbed my recorder and set off to enter this world that I loathed but knew nothing about.
I don't really have a plan. Hopefully that's fine.
I didn't have a plan. I didn't even know what I wanted to ask him. Could you make me not be upset at you because you're rich? That sounds like an awful question. But if this conversation could possibly shrink my slow-burning disdain for him, that's all I wanted. There are parts of Kennebunkport that hinted I was entering a different world.
There are pink flamingos in the middle of this roundabout. Wow, look at that house. Beautiful houses. Who lives in these houses? I don't know.
I couldn't help but feel like Odysseus chartering through unknown territory. As I passed the private property sign, I was nervous that I may have the wrong address.
Turns slightly left and becomes Beach Avenue.
I wonder if Eric is right on the water. That would be crazy! I don't know if this is where he lives. This is ridiculous.
Your destination is on the right.
When I walk in, I feel like I'm in a J. Crew ad. Everything is clean. His house has this beach look. Light pastels, white, beige, and blue furniture. It's definitely a getaway home. You can feel it. And when you look outside their huge glass windows, nothing but light streams in as you watch the tide roll out. The ocean is right there. We chit-chat for a while I admire his house, and then we sit on the couch and just jump into this conversation. Eric knows why I'm here with my recorder.
I find money to also be like really uncomfortable, but it's almost like because it's uncomfortable, I want to talk about it.
I don't know. I'm still trying to think of how this like fits into a story that doesn't make me sound like a dick.
Yeah. Okay, well, so
I'm surprised to hear him say that. I assumed Eric was proud of his money.
So I didn't know until I went to Kentucky that like trust fund babies was a thing.
AKA people like you.
I don't know, it's just interesting because like that was the first time that like people who I don't know had money, they just like downplayed it. Yeah, I wonder why you did purposefully.
I mean, I should make one thing clear. I think I've never, it's like if your family has money, that's they're good. Like they did something for it. I don't feel like if anything I have, I didn't earn it. So I can't brag about something that's not mine. You know, if I made crazy money on my own, I could feel comfortable flaunting it in a way that's different from just having it based on your family. I was always like really low key about it because I just, it doesn't impress me, and I don't, and it get, like it's a thing that's pretty easy to be hated on for, right? Mm-hmm. Like it, people use it as a way to really like delegitimize what someone makes. Mm-hmm. And there's kind of like this like mentality that's like, oh well, you wouldn't understand this because you don't have to. Mm-hmm. Or you're not really working hard. Someone helped you. You didn't really earn that. Someone gave it to you.
It's kind of like he's reading my mind. This is exactly what I thought about him after I saw his yacht.
I mean, I was like really apprehensive about like as soon as like when like you like dropped me off at the marina that one time after fall break, I was like, fuck, Megan Tan is never going to look at me the same ever, 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 ever again.
It was shocking. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I'm going to be like so honest with you. It was really shocking because like that was the first thing I've ever even seen of your family and like the wealth that you guys have. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I was just like, what? What?
As we continue talking, I start to realize that Eric has his own problems identifying himself as a rich kid.
It doesn't feel good to feel like you're not earning something. Even though it feels easy, or even though it might feel nice, still at the end of the day, you're like, oh, man, I have this stuff, or I have this job, or I have this whatever, but I don't really deserve it. And that's a weird, like, kind of heavy feeling to have. Honestly, I was really interested in doing something creative because it was something no one could help me with. There's no strings that anyone can pull to help me in this field. And I think I wanted to earn something
for yourself.
Yeah.
But when Eric and I were in school together studying photography, our motivations were different.
I remember thinking in school, like watching people that were like hustling. I was like, man, these kids are hungry. Like, or also thinking on the flip side, like, man, these kids are crazy for being willing to go this far into the hole for something that might not pan out. Like, okay, I get why they're hustling, like, because, like, they need to. Like, you hear your friends talking about stuff that you have no idea about. That just, for, through no fault of your own and through no fault of their own, you will literally never understand.
Like what? Like, what are you talking about?
Like, no, man, I would love to go to that concert, but I don't have $20. Like, $20? What do you mean? It's just $20. Yeah, but if I do that, I can't pay my phone bill. Or if I do that, I can't, like, I won't make my rent. Or I'd love to go out and celebrate that tonight, but I went out last weekend and I can only go out one weekend a month and still pay all my bills. And you're like, okay, I understand what you're saying, but I don't understand what that feels like. And that's a weird, that makes you feel like you don't, like, that makes you feel really, like, outside of reality. And you are outside of reality because that is reality, right? And that's a really weird, like, thing to be like, man, I've, like, that's never going to happen. I'm never going to be stressed out about $20.
And you probably won't ever relate to that.
There's some, like, struggle that I, like, won't ever be able to relate to. Just, like, there is, like, some pressure there that I think there's, like, a healthy amount of pressure, and I'm not sure if I always felt as much of it as I would have liked to. Because consequences of failure were less. And that just kind of is what it is.
What do you mean? Why do you, like, say, like, that?
The consequences of failure being less is what it is. There's nothing I could do about it. And, like, there's nothing that you could do about the consequences of failure being higher. And I think there are some positive things about high consequences for failure. They would, like, have light the fire under your ass, but that's not there. There's nothing you can really do to light the fire unless the stakes are high. And to some degree, the stakes will never be extremely high.
It never occurred to me that needing to make money because you don't have a safety net is an advantage. For the first time since that day at the marina, I can feel the playing field between Eric and I start to level out again.
So do you feel like that has made it harder for you to, like, I don't know, like, move forward quickly?
Is it harder to motivate yourself because you have too much of a cushion?
I think the shittiest people are the ones that have never had to work, and that's why I want to work. And people have never had to earn anything, and that's why I want to make my own money.
As I look around his parents' living room, I assume he doesn't have to work. He could easily hang out here by the ocean with no consequences. So, if he doesn't need the money, how does he force himself to light his own fire?
So then, have you, like, given yourself, like, rules almost?
Yeah, I mean, I'm done with school and I'm not asking for anyone for anything. I don't really want to. I don't want to be reliant on any of those things. I'm kind of, I'd always thought, you know, like, this is a cool idea that there's this security, but I shouldn't bank on it too heavily, because you can wake up tomorrow and it can be gone. You can have a huge falling out with your parents and it can be gone. There's a lot of things that can take that away really quickly. So you can't, you know, base your whole life off this.
When we graduated from college, we both lost something. I lost an environment where I didn't have to worry about money, and he lost a community of people who pushed him to perform. Now that we're out of school, inside of Eric's safety net, he's trying to create a life where he's making it on his own, just like me. As I hop in the car and pull away from Eric's driveway, I'm leaving his world for a second time. But those twisted feelings I had before are gone. My stomach isn't in knots. I still know Eric is lucky to have his money. But for the first time, I realize I'm also lucky that I don't. In my world, I don't need to light a fire under my ass. There's already one burning. My motivations have been fueled by survival and rewarded with fulfillment. Without them, I wouldn't be able to feel the emotional ride of a life that I can call my own.
We're all privileged in different ways.
This is Christina again.
I mean, it's kind of a gratitude practice, actually. That has helped me in a lot of ways. Is just, okay, at the end of the day, write down three things that you're grateful for. I've found that it helps a lot in just reminding you, like, things are good. Mm-hmm. You're okay.
And then you don't have to be anybody else.
Right.
Coming to terms with where you are isn't based on your wealth or your lack of wealth. It's an everyday practice. After a long week, it's late, and I climb into bed with my boyfriend, Ben, and I ask him,
will you do these three things of appreciation with me?
Okay.
I'm happy we live in Maine.
I'm happy we have money.
We have money? I'm grateful I have friends who support me doing this podcast.
I'm glad we're pursuing our passions.
I'm happy all of our parents are still alive.
I'm glad we have each other to support each other.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Love you.
Editing help for this episode was provided by Devin Taylor and Ben Severance. The voices you heard in the piece were Dan B., Amanda Bowes, Bailey Cleary, Jad Melham, and Christina Murphy. And special thanks to Eric Shea. To keep tabs on Millennial, follow us on Twitter at MillennialPDCST, like podcasts, but without the vowels. On Facebook, on Instagram, and if you want to give Millennial a high five, rate us on iTunes. Also, if you want to know when the next show is going to drop, go to millennialpodcast.org, scroll down to the bottom, and sign up for the newsletter. We're also calling out for story pitches. If you have a story about debt, being in debt, or maybe you won the lottery and were able to pay off your debt, tell us about it. Email stories@millennialpodcast.org. I'm Megan Tan, and thanks for listening. You do want to get beer?
Yes.
Where are we going to get beer?
A gas station beer or something.
Gas station beer? Okay, whatever. When Ben and I first met, I was not a beer drinker. And I remember him explicitly telling me,
this is a phase. We're going to push through this phase.
And now I would consider myself to be a beer snob. But I don't know everything there is to know about beer.
So these are not bitter or bracing. They're just like
gummy bear juice.
Yeah, gummy bear juice.
On the next Theory of Everything, Benjamin Walker tries to make sense of America's craft beer scene.
My exit strategy is death.
To listen to this episode, subscribe to Benjamin Walker's Theory of Everything wherever you get your podcasts. Or you can go to the Radiotopia page or visit toe.prx.org.